week's podcast, we caught up with grumpy old programmer Mike Woodhouse and talked about testing in Excel, test-driven development, and Excel unit his add-in for performing test-driven development. Enjoy! So we're joined today by Mike Woodhouse. Mike works in London in the UK. He's a financial analyst working in the banking industry. He runs a blog, Grumpy Old Programmer. Mike, how are you doing?
Thanks very much, Russ.
I thought we'd have a bit of a chat about VBA Excel testing. You've obviously written the X unit add-in available on Codeplex at the moment. It's not something that you probably widely associated with Excel development. I think the testing world is something Excel yep. VBA developers are missing out on. Do you think it's something that they've looked?
If your involvement with VBA recording single sort of one-shot macros and replaying them, then you're missing out on nothing. In other areas, you're looking at applications that have been written in Excel using up to and above 1,000 lines of VBA. Using and built with, in some cases, with some awareness of object-oriented techniques, making proper use of classes and areas. I think any tool that they design right and to build confidence in how the thing's been put together.
Are there any others? There's none others that I would. There's fit in Visual Studio. I'm sure you could use for VSTO and that type of thing, but nothing for VBA.
Yes. Oh, for in the two or three sort of well-known frameworks, the NUnit, which has been around for a long time, there's the Microsoft, or even within Visual Basic, up to its, there wasn't a lot. I found one sketchy framework that worked, was designed to work within Access, but nothing at all for VBA in the Excel environment.
Yeah. And nothing that I'm aware of either for the grid world.
Yet. I'm not even sure what constitutes a good test for a worksheet.
Yeah, I think any UI is a problem for any sort of unit testing type approach, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote the framework sheet as an output medium, probably for end users then to take on and we were talking to the database from VBA, doing some aggregation and statistical calculations on the results that we were getting, and then using the worksheet as for output. And a lot of these applications were taking anything from sort of towards an hour to run. So having some was kind of valuable. Test-driven development or test-driven design or behavior-driven development are same concept, and they're coming from the agile family of development methodologies. Back when I was programming about 30 years ago, writing programs with a pencil, 6 months to write a program, and we worked with structured methodologies where an analyst would, that was an approximation of what the user thought he wanted 6 months ago, and over time, that refined to in an effort to ensure that the requirements were more closely met. So more checkpoints were introduced, and more forms were filled out, and we it eventually acquired the priority developed. Sometime in the late 90s, much as a result of dynamic languages and scripting languages and PCs and to write a program and hit a, there was a sort of a backlash came out. Developers started to work in very short time boxes, iterations of evolving their software and the requirements as they went, delivering early, delivering often. And basically coming up and sort of working in a way that was almost the antithesis of the waterfall process.
So I suppose it's, for me, the sort of difference between maybe a waterfall or an old-fashioned type of development cycle would be you'd get the user would come to you or the business would come to you and say, we want this type of system, this type of functionality. The coders and the analysts would go away, build a system, come back after X months and say, here it is. See you later. And I suppose agile is more iterative, isn't it? It's
Yes, and it's a response to this are often not going to be the requirements that they said that they gave you at the beginning of the process. So they're going to change your what your solution is going to have to in a way that that is responsive to that, so that you don't find yourself a year down the line delivering what the guy said he thought he wanted a year ago. And then you've got to go back and do another 6 months to catch up with what he actually discovers he needs now. They write a piece of code that specifies the behavior that is expected.
So, I mean, this now we're sort of into sort of test driven design type of area now, aren't we? And I mean, it's quite recent. It's always a bit difficult to say what's recent in IT, isn't it? But we're talking like within the last 5 years or so, aren't we?
The origination of the concept going right back to the first Chrysler car compensation project that pulled in as a consultant, and sort of came from basically the people directly involved. So Kent Beck's probably the main man of sort of historically. Kent has written more than one unit testing framework. He wrote the book called Test Driven Development, which is an excellent primer on the subject. Project ran sort of from that came out of that, started to be sort of make their way into the mainstream sort of a year or two after that. I remember sort of buying a series of excellent thin extreme programming books in the sort of 2000s. Yeah. It's been around since then, but it started to come to prominence more recently than that.
He's certainly the name I associate with it as sort of the founding father of TDD. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what your view on this is, but I think that this sort of cycle, stay close to the stakeholder, quite a good fit with Excel applications.
I think, yeah, absolutely. An iteration in Excel could be something as small as adding a function into a cell, or sort of extending an existing piece of VBA to do the most useful as I can think of. That's a much larger unit of work than a test would expose. A test is a one unit test within a test design process might be a 30 second to a 5 minute piece of work.
So there's any sort of relationship between the time you spend writing, say, the functional code and the time you spend writing the sort of test code? Is there any sort of relationship between those two things?
In a pure sense, you'd spend 2 minutes writing the test, and then you'd run your test framework and you'd check that the test fails. Then you write the three word cycle is red, green, refactor.
Yeah, so I mean, just explain the sort of concept of test-driven design, because it's a little bit counterintuitive, probably, isn't it? Until you get your head around it.
Yeah, the thing that your application doesn't currently do that you need it to do. It could be a calculation that it needs to perform. It could be does it retrieve a record? And then you write a piece of code that will verify that it does that in the full, that it doesn't currently do that, and you'll run that test and the test will fail, and then you write just enough code to ensure that to stop that test failing, and that gives you a sort of a cycle stimulus to stop it being red.
Because no one likes to see.
Yeah, you don't like to see big red things turning up all over the place. What we want is nice bright green things turning up. So we write code that can be very simple, just enough code to make the test, and then we run the test again, and everything turns green if we've done it right. And then we go back and we clean up, so we remove duplication, and we make sure that our code. So we've changed at that point. We've changed our design slightly. So we go back to make sure that our design is consistent, and then we look for the next small piece of functionality that we want to add. And that really can be single figures of minutes. or less. It can be a very, very fast cycle. Mm. So the framework needs to be lightweight, and it needs to be, you want to be not writing a lot of code to make that test. So we're not testing the whole app to that, so that's a different, testing that we're still going to carry out integration testing and use rate when the application set of functions that we're looking to add have been added. This is a design. Yep. This is part of the design activity. There is still a testing activity that will occur later, and that's where this test-driven development against testing problem comes in. And that's why there's a groundswell within some of the communities to talk about behavior-driven development.
So to put that, just to try and put that in a context for say a typical Excel situation. The user may come to you and say, I'd like some functionality that goes onto the internet, collects some stock data, and puts it in a chart. So in a test-driven type framework, I might write, logs onto the internet website, collects the data, write a test which tests that, write the code to do it, then run the test, and the next code is maybe add it to the chart. Write a test which adds it to the chart, which checks whether it's added to the chart, then write the code to do it, run it, and obviously refactor those two pieces between running the tests. Would it be fit together something like that?
Yeah, I mean, or something smaller than that. Does it for a particular stock? Can we write a function that assembles the URL from a stock ticker? I mean, that...
Yeah. And do you link those tests then? So if you're designing one bit of functionality, which the user has this requirement to get data off the internet and put it in a chart, do you test that? Do you keep running those tests until that whole thing is complete, or would you just do the each case? Or do you really again?
One of the things that the tests are giving you is a security blanket. You want to know that. All of your tests all of the time, then those tests are going to tell you if you've changed something that has had an unexpected... you've got a constant regression test, that little bit of... And it's also a... You're modifying the design without change, and those tests are going to keep telling you that whether you've changed, inadvertently changed the functionality while you're refactoring your code.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so a good example of that is like if you write... You have a common function, which is say in Excel, a common function is to go and look, find the last cell in the list. And you may have one function which uses it to find the last text, and one function which uses it to find the last number. And you at some point inadvertently change that function that are called by both procedures, and then the first procedure breaks, something like that. And your test would catch that out and highlight it to you, right?
Yeah, it shouldn't. If your design is evolving in a good way, such that your functions are fairly sort of tightly contained, and they're you're keeping that you're managing the dependencies between them well, it's not a red bar or red screen that makes you sort of look up and sort of gives you that sort of ooh moment. I wonder what happened there. When those tests are telling you that, that's when one of the times when they're really paying off. Because it's something you didn't expect, and you may not have picked up for some time, and then you're back.
That's a good point. That's a good use of test frameworks, because you can come back to something that you have not touched for maybe 6 months or something, make a modification, run the test, and like that gives you security blanket, doesn't it? You've not inadvertently cocked anything up that you were when you the original code. Now you're back and broken anything like that. Yeah.
And of course, there will inevitably be bugs that you haven't, that you didn't code for initially. When those bugs turn up, write a test that exposes the bug, and then fix it. And you can check that you're. It's a lot of the time using it as the process is trivial. It seems lightweight. It's the times when the unusual happen and the framework picks it up, and your tests pick up the unusual subtle change, subtle difference, that it really pays off.
Mike, in terms of the add-in that you've written, the Excel unit, which is, if anyone listening, they want to go and look at it, they can find information out about it on your blog or at CodePlex, can't they? It's called Excel Unit. If they search for that, it's there.
The CodePlex project is Excel VBA Dev Tools.
Right. Okay.
There's some more. There's some more.
Oh, have you got the profiler over there as well?
One day. I've got a bunch of tools that are good enough for me and probably not good enough for general consumption.
I've got a bunch of applications like that, so.
Yeah, they need to get cleaned up. They need to get properly ribbonized. Oh. And, 2007-ified as opportunities permit.
Does explain to us the framework and how someone would go around testing their Excel code with Excel unit? How would that fit together?
We're looking at the first of all, there's the framework itself, which is which doesn't change and provides the code that is common between instances of applications and their tests. Mm-hmm. The framework will build a test that will contain the test for your application itself.
Right.
So we have there's an XLA and two XLSs in an Excel unit testing environment. So tests get written in the application, and because of the, it's very largely at the moment it's very class based, and the reason for that is because interaction between Excel VBA projects is a lot more constrained than it was in full blown Visual Basic version 6.
Yeah.
Having sort of run into this and suffer the pain, the testing framework handles that plumbing for you. There's a little off the Excel unit menu that where you can please, it will generate that class, it will generate a test class template for you, and it will add a factory method. So it creates a module in the application that will create and pass back a new instance of the class that you want to test.
Yeah,
so the application will run, and that making a sort of a virtue out of a necessity, that does mean that you can if you want to write a 10 constructor on that class because you're running a function in a module rather than actually
which is a dubious practice anyway, isn't it, to a certain extent. It's fair to say that's potentially a downside of full functional testing limitation within test-driven.
Yeah, design. I mean, it's you have to work within the limitations of VBA as well. So it's a style that I'm reasonably comfortable with. But as I say, in order to create a test, your actual application, that is where the referencing only goes one way, so your application can run standalone without caring about whether it's tested or not. That seems to be the best solution. The best solution that I have come up with to date.
I'm just thinking on the top of my head here, could you run the code from in, actually, you could, I wonder if you could get the, essentially, so you could automate the EDI object, IDE object, and run the code on the code inside the IDI at the time. Yeah.
Possibly. I mean, there is a fair amount of on-the-fly code generation occurring within the framework already. At the point when you start to execute your tests, the code, the add-in will scan the code in the testing application, looking for test classes, and it dynamically will the module that executes those tests.
Right, that's the sort of horsepower of it, isn't it, really, I suppose, of a testing framework.
It's, yeah, I mean, and to be honest, it's one of the fun things about writing the framework is injecting code into various modules and running it on the fly. You can have a lot of fun sort of playing around with the VBE. whether it counts as true metaprogramming, but
it's an interesting OM, isn't it? The VBA one.
The fact that I can generate code and compile it at runtime. I mean, there's a security issue, and there's a sort of maintainability nightmare. It's probably not something you want to want to think very carefully before introducing it into a live business environment. But
it's very powerful to be able to do that sort of stuff, though, isn't it? Yeah. So it fits together. There's these three parts. One of them's the add-in itself does the sort of plumbing. You have to write the test cases, and then it creates of the code you're trying to test and calls that and tests that object. Here's a statement. It's the testing is only as good as the test cases that are written. Discuss. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. And somebody starting out in great test cases, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, the first VBA macro that you wrote wasn't much good. We're all doing it all the time. We have the internet as a vast body of work discussing. I mean, very little excuse for not going out and learning about this stuff. Like when I were a lad, we didn't have this. We had Computer Weekly and something more. Then you asked your boss to send you on a course. These days, you can spend half an hour on the internet on it. 7 years since the test-driven methodology, religious wars and crusades and fighting and blood and
that's all part of the fun, though, isn't it? At least
it's happening all the time. There are mailing lists for where you can go and you can ask questions about technique, and they will get you and help you and scream at you and call you a noob and out of that you can pick information that that will help you to do it better the next time.
And in terms of writing those test cases, what are the sort of, obviously vary on exactly what it is you're testing, but how do you sort of, what's the mindset to get into writing a piece of code to test another piece of code? What sort of things should you be thinking about testing?
I think if you start with something simple like a function where you can say for a set of inputs what the output should be, the typical something unit framework will provide a set of assertions for you to apply. The simplest assertion will just be an assertion that...
Talk about assertions just briefly there, shouldn't we? Assertion is something which is you write a test case and then the assertion is that it's either true or false, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are a whole bunch of things that I haven't implemented because it's hard. The basic idea is that you need some establishing that the test passed or failed. And the standard way to do that, or the canonical way to do that, is through an assertion. Or an assert function, or sort of whatever the language environment likes. The simplest assertion we have is simply that takes a Boolean and an optional message. If the Boolean, if assert gets it, the test failed, and assertion will be assert equal. So we'll pass it two arguments, and it will test.
So I'm trying to think of a practical example here. If I had a user form there, and I want to enter into it a number on a text box. Now, I've got a validation routine, and the validation routine takes a parameter, which is obviously the view in a text box. And so my test case be something along the lines of, I'll pass it a string, and it should fail, and that would be one test. Or would I say I'll pass it a string and it will fail, and then I'll pass it a number which is more than 7 characters and it should fail, or a number which is higher than 10 should fail? Would I break those into separate cases or combine them into a test case?
I think certainly. I would expect that you would have kind of is a valid input function that would take and return a Boolean. So we could say assert not is valid banana, assert is valid 126. Start with something simple. Your initial sort of first assert you would write is assert therefore false. So then to make that test pass to return true.
I suppose the mindset is to break every possible front case down into a separate test and test that, and then write another little test case to test another sort of logic. And
first thing your function does is just enough to pass that. You're saying I need to return true when I call it. So return true, then that's going to fail. And now you've got to put some more logic into the function. But only enough to check that strings don't work.
Yeah. And then do you, when you're writing these tests, and any sort of, do you have on the one hand sort of specification, on the desk on a piece of paper, a user case or a specification or something, and you step through it like that? Or how do you construct the steps where you build the cases?
It's going to vary. Often you'll have you'll be building the thing in because rules that you have in your head. Other times it'll be there'll be a set of rules that you've been given. Quite often, as you're doing this, you'll discover you've been given a sort of a set of and discover areas where you said it shouldn't accept strings. But a good number can, and you don't have to figure that out for yourself. You go back and you say, well. So working in those small steps quite often will help you to throw up things aren't clear. And then you have everybody back and ask your user or your stakeholder for clarification.
Because you don't have to, because you're not so heavily invested. You're not sort of down the path, are you, then trying to dig your way back out to find out the little mistake?
Yeah. You're working in very small loops. You're working in a small loop within a slightly larger loop within a slightly larger loop. But you're in the state of constant feedback, and you're going from red to green all the time. You're getting all these little tiny bells ringing, and you're getting little sort of little endorphin jolts all the time to tell you that you're a good programmer. You're the guy who makes things go green.
Which is always nice, right? Which is always nice. Yeah. Is there an argument? I mean, there are, like a lot of these things, some people sort of get really into, can be a whole career, can't it? But there is some value in, the discussion around the limitation of the person that also writes the code to test the code. I mean, is that something that it's worth keeping an eye on, or do you think you get around that with experience, or is it worth getting testing someone else's cases, that type of thing?
This writing tests as a design activity against writing tests as a testing activity.
Right.
There's no problem with the person developing the code right in order to drive their design to exercise the verification and assert that a more integrated scale is correct may well be something that in larger projects would pass to a dedicated tester, someone whose job is a good tester is somebody whose job is trying to break things. They're generally sort of sociopaths or even just people with a slightly different sort of take on reality. I used to work with a girl who was an absolute genius at breaking things.
Right.
You'd give her a piece of absolutely rock solid airtight code, and within 5 minutes she'd be saying, "Is it supposed to do this?" And I pressed that, and then, whoa, what did you do? Take that, go back, replay that for me. Show me what the hell did you do then? How did you do that? So, invaluable. I mean, a huge pain, because you don't want people to be breaking your code. You don't want to go back and fix the bug. You thought you'd finished it. But every one of those cases that's picked up before it gets to the user domain is one less blow to your reputation. So I think, there is a lot to be said for having individuals whose job is to try and break the thing, because developers aren't good at making their code break.
Yeah, correct.
It's our baby. We don't want to hurt our baby.
And you're so familiar with it. And also, you're from a population of people which are inherently understanding of computers. So, you're not going to do something stupid.
Yeah, that's okay. We want this code to work. So writing our own sort of tests prior to passing the thing into production is something that may not always be the most appropriate way to work. Now, I mean, with spreadsheets, I think spreadsheets are inherently anyway. So,
yeah.
I mean, where I work, I'll deliver a spreadsheet application to a user. He plays with it for half an hour. He comes back and says, "Okay, that's cool, but is there any way we could have that?" So we're in a fairly tight loop anyway. I work most of the applications I build are for guys that are either within 30 or 40 feet on where I sit, or are on the other end of a video line in Frankfurt.
Yeah.
The loop is pretty tight, and we iterate very quickly because there is a constant feedback going on.
I mean, I was gonna make a point, which is like test-driven design doesn't really it doesn't replace user testing, doesn't replace SIT testing, doesn't replace UAT.
No, absolutely not.
But particularly in spreadsheet, into the spreadsheet world where the projects are smaller, you know, the functionality set is smaller, the number of users is typically, you know, fewer than, say, I don't know, between 1 and 20 or something people might use a spreadsheet. And sure. the user acceptance testing is often done by the actual guy who's going to use it himself, rather than, you know, some test manager or some group of tests.
I think if it's a user, you know, if we're looking at user acceptance testing, then honestly, who better? Mm. Who better than the user to say if they're going to accept it? There probably are situations where a business analyst will act as the proxy for a user. Is he going to be too busy to use it when he gets it? I've worked in dealing readers. Now, if that spreadsheet is going to be influencing the trader's decision on in a way that will affect whether he makes or loses money, I've generally found them fairly they're kind of intolerant of silly mistakes, because that's the nature of the beast. But most users are using the thing anyway. Then they already have some investment in it. Yeah.
Is there one thing? I mean, one thing that I feel is there's a bit of there's a bit of user education there sometimes. Like, some users turn up and expect it to be perfect and cannot understand why there's an off by one error. Why Enzosoft should it do everything that I expected it was going to do perfectly first time?
The more the user can be involved, surprised or upset they're going to be in those situations. Because if they've been involved and invested in the development, if you're in that feedback loop where the user sees the thing being developed, quite possibly starts to use it from an early stage, then they are generally as invested as you are.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, and then they can give you a heads up if they say, when we wanted it to refresh every minute, what we actually meant was we wanted it to refresh every time there was a change.
Yeah. What you often find is that the applications, because they tend to sort of turn up in a something of an ad hoc way, you build a piece of it and they looked at it and says, if I look at this, what would be really useful is this. And you find that you start off heading in one direction, and each time you've delivered an extra piece of functionality, you've moved a little bit further away from that original direction. That's brilliant, because each time you're getting closer to what he actually needed, as opposed to what he thought he needed when he didn't have the thing in front of him in a way that that helped him to see what he and that can only be good.
And then of course you can jump back, make the change and rerun those cases.
So if you're a single developer working on it, you could easily be delivering your updated versions of that spreadsheet in two or three releases a day for a single user application, and each one of those is adding value. It means, you know, if at any time they're in a situation where you've got 3 weeks' work, test version of the spreadsheet, you know, maybe you lose a couple of hours of work. So the cost of change, the cost of sort of switching to something else is much lower.
Is there an element of self-documentation if you look back and review the test cases that you've written as well? Is that a benefit? that's an edge case, is it?
Well, somebody coming to the application that show how the code behaves to some extent. Should you write the code without any comments? Should you write the code without documentation? I don't know if I want to get into a war.
It's not a replacement, but it's an additional opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, documentation has generated more religious wars than any testing.
Yeah.
My
code's so well written, I don't need any comments.
Well,
discuss.
It's an objective. If you can write code that is clear enough to not require comments, then good. I mean, I think that certainly, ideally, comments should just I, and that's going to help us. That it's not getting us somewhere that we want.
But the guy, the C++ expert, comes up to me and goes, "Oh, you know, I don't need to write codes for my comment because it's so I can understand it just by looking at it." And then he has a go at me for writing VB and saying it's so verbose. And that in comments, so I'm like, I can't win.
Things like generally be certainly in C and some, I guess, C++ to an extent as well, although I'm no C++ enthusiast. Two character variable names saying, okay, this is the current account balance. Well, you know, call it current account balance and then we don't need the comment.
I'll put a dollar in front and declare it to a string as well, even.
Yeah, because it's a sort of dollar underscore, let's head into Perl. And it's not I don't feel the lack.
I don't feel that you've been deprived of stuff. Okay, so I think we can wrap up there, Mike. It's been great talking to you, and no doubt we'll catch up again very soon.
Nice talking to you. Cheers.